What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Coming home to Wyoming, it still feels like an adventure. It still feels big and wild and raw. There's a lot of these little jewels sitting out there that not a lot of people know about. They bring you closer to something bigger than yourself.
Discover why Academy Award-winning director and climber Jimmy Chin still calls Wyoming home. And plan your adventure at travelwyoming.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Super Tuesday right around the corner now, a week from tomorrow. And South Carolina, Nevada over the weekend. In Las Vegas, it was Hillary Clinton's night this time, her first clear win.
Some may have doubted us, but we never doubted each other. And this one's for you.
And Donald Trump on top in South Carolina with his favorite theme.
When you win, it's beautiful. And we're going to start, we are going to start winning for our country. We're going to start winning.
Jeb Bush is out. Sanders, Cruz, Rubio still very much in. And now things pick up speed. This hour on Point, what just happened and the push to Super Tuesday. Joining me now from New York is Maggie Haberman, presidential campaign correspondent for the New York Times. She's recently traveled with the Trump campaign, has her eye on the whole arena. Maggie Haberman, great to have you with us today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Ryan Grimm is with us from Washington, Washington bureau chief for the Huffington Post, watching all the races. Ryan, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Sabrina Siddiqui with The Guardian joins us in just a minute. She's been in South Carolina, been with Rubio, headed out to Las Vegas for tomorrow's Republican caucus. But here we are. We're going to look at what we just learned out of these. But Maggie, remind us first, Super Tuesday coming up 1 week from tomorrow, and just how big is that now, rapidly approaching mega day of voting?
It's a big deal in both contests, the Republican contest and the Democratic contest. On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton's folks see, you know, when the final delegate count is done out of Nevada, they're waiting on Clark County, which is the biggest county. Mm-hmm. but they are hopeful that they are going to reclaim the pledged delegate lead that they had lost after, you know, Iowa heading into New Hampshire. So they will have a lead both in pledged delegates and super delegates. You know, that eluded her in 2008. She had super delegates who are these members of the party, elected officials, governors, and so forth.
Who can kind of vote for whoever they like in the end, right?
Right. They are not – where as opposed to pledge delegates who do need to stick with someone, Obama had the lead in that in 2008. So this gives her sort of a very clear in her campaign's mind edge. And on Super Tuesday, if she does well, which, you know, look, she is – seems poised to win South Carolina on Saturday.
This is when the Democrats have their equivalent of what the Republicans just had. They have their actual primary in South Carolina.
That's right, held on two different days. Mm-hmm. But Bernie Sanders had made noises that seemed almost like he was going to skip the state. He was there yesterday. But his team is not showing a tremendous amount of confidence in doing well there when I think they had been hoping that with a win in Nevada, they would go in with the wind at their backs into South Carolina. And so Super Tuesday presents a real opportunity for Clinton to really hobble any path forward on delegates that Bernie Sanders might have. And on the Republican side, you've got a bunch of states. There's 11 states voting for the Republicans. And I think one of them is a caucus, or maybe more than one is a caucus. But, you know, caucuses have not been Donald Trump's friend so far. Mm. I mean, in Iowa, a lot of it was about organizing, and he was out-organized. I think that, you know, because of the dynamic of Super Tuesday with so many states voting, and because a lot of them are big media states, he will benefit by sort of his favored campaign style, which is dropping in, doing a giant rally, getting a ton of media exposure, and then leaving. But equally important, as long as there are four other candidates running against him, he benefits from a divided field. And I don't see next Tuesday as an exception. He's already got It's very early in the delegate process on the Republican side, but he's got more than three times as many as his closest competitors. He could emerge in pretty good shape after Tuesday, where 595 delegates are up for grabs.
You know, we go so quickly from free-for-all to maybe something different. It's hard to say. I mean, Ryan Grimm, look forward to next Tuesday. I mean, here we are. We've got Texas and Georgia and Alabama and Tennessee, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Vermont's in there, Massachusetts, Virginia, Minnesota, Alaska as well. Can anybody in either camp put it away next week, Ryan?
Put it away is a little tough, but getting close to it is certainly possible. You know, like you said, just a couple days ago, we were at a total free for all. After this coming Tuesday, you know, we very well could have a very strong idea of who the nominees are going to be in both parties, and particularly in the Republican Party. Ted Cruz had banked his entire strategy on hanging in until Super Tuesday and then dominating in the very kind of conservative, evangelical dominated, what they call the SEC primary. That isn't looking as good for him as he thought it was because of this unexpected wild card named Donald Trump, who came in and just annihilated him in South Carolina. You know, for Donald Trump to have beaten him among evangelicals calls into question the viability of his candidacy. And so if Ted Cruz gets wiped out again among evangelicals on March 1st, there really isn't much rationale for him to move forward, and the pressure on him will be intense to get out. Now, pressure on him to not do certain things like shut down the government has been intense throughout his entire federal career, and he does it anyway.
Right,
so,
right. Donald Trump, we'll see. Yeah, Donald Trump, amazingly, in South Carolina with 34% of the evangelical vote. Of course, you can talk about how that's calculated, but 34% to Ted Cruz is just 26%, and Marco Rubio right behind Cruz on that vote, supposed to be his real strong suit. Rubio with 21% of that vote. Maggie Ryan, stand by. Sabrina Siddiqui joins us right now from Las Vegas. She's been on the road with Marco Rubio's campaign in South Carolina last week in Las Vegas, now getting ready for tomorrow's Republican caucus there. Sabrina Siddiqui, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So you've especially been with the Rubio campaign. He edged out in front of Ted Cruz in South Carolina to take second place there and has been talking big over the weekend. How do the Rubio people look at next Tuesday, week from tomorrow, Super Tuesday, and their real prospects? Now, how do you see them?
I think for the Rubio campaign, the biggest win in their view was the fact that they were able to inch out just ahead of Ted Cruz. Now, obviously, this was by less than a percentage point, and one of the things that the Rubio campaign has been very skilled at is creating the sense of momentum and creating the sense of a victory, even when he's actually been, you know, in this case, a distant second behind Donald Trump.
And a teeny tiny victory.
Right. It's a teeny tiny victory because it goes back to what Ryan was just saying, which is that the linchpin of Ted Cruz's strategy was these Super Tuesday states. And, you know, for Marco Rubio or for Ted Cruz, that matter, the goal here is to make this a two-man race between, you know, one of these senators and Donald Trump. And what the Rubio campaign sees is, you know, now we're going into the SEC states, and it could very well be that Donald Trump picks up a lot of these states, that Ted Cruz will, you know, not have the sort of sweep or the sort of overwhelming performance that he had once looked at, and that there's been this, you know, this moment where it's been exposed that he doesn't actually have this lock on the Southern evangelical vote. So that gives them more incentive, I think, to be able to go to donors and say, you know, we're still in this. And they've also succeeded, of course, in crowd in terms of Jeb Bush having to drop out of the race. You know, where they win is the question, however, that they still haven't answered. And there is going to be a point where they're going to have to be able to not just focus on the delegate race, but, you know, certainly going into the winner-takes-all states, they're not going to be able to simply say that, you know, second was enough, that, you know, that it's enough to just walk away with a handful of delegates, because at that point you're looking at a situation where Donald Trump is running away with the nomination.
The tempo changes very quickly here, though there has been talk for months about this dragging on right into the conventions and maybe even being decided on the convention floor this summer or in the smoke-filled backrooms, which we haven't seen in a long, long time. Maggie, of course, Texas is Ted Cruz's state, senator from Texas. Now, let's acknowledge John Kasich and Ben Carson still in this race. And their votes matter. I mean, they each had almost as much as Jeb Bush there, all in that 7% and change in South Carolina. But what about Ted Cruz in his home state? Is that a lock for him or not?
I think what we have learned this cycle is that is that nothing is a lock, right? I mean, so I assume that Ted Cruz should win. I don't remember what the latest polling is, although I believe it had Trump ahead, as almost every state has. Cruz, to your question, I mean, the bottom line is whether it's a lock or not, and it wouldn't seem to be just based on what we're seeing, Cruz can't lose his home state. You can't lose your home state and credibly make the argument that you have a path. The same is true for Kasich, and the same is true for Marco Rubio on March 15th.
Ohio, Florida, both coming up, yep.
Exactly. And you know, the rules in Florida were changed to make it a winner-take-all state, which was done to help Jeb Bush, which is obviously a distant memory at this point. But if Donald Trump wins that state, he wins a very large number of delegates. No candidate can afford to lose their own state. And so Texas is an enormous test for Cruz. What is interesting to me is he told he did a Texas reporter only gaggle right after South Carolina and said, I'm coming back very soon to spend time in the state. That to me was a signal that he is concerned.
When you've got to go to your own home state, of course, it's a big pot of delegates, 155 delegates on Super Tuesday in Texas. I mean, nothing
not
else.
It's not winner take all. Those are proportionally allocated.
So everybody gets their chunk of that. And of course, that makes a big difference. Donald Trump ultimately taking all of the delegates out of South Carolina. And then we come to this, the Democrat delegate count. And Ryan, Maggie's saying Bernie Sanders at risk of being hobbled in that count, of getting into a mathematical situation he can't get out of. Is he there yet, Ryan?
He's not quite there yet, but he's certainly getting close. You know, he's sort of in a race against time here. You know, his unfamiliarity numbers were, you know, extremely high among Democratic voters. You know, the people who follow politics passionately have known about Bernie Sanders for decades, but for many others, he's just an obscure independent senator from the state of Vermont, and this is the first time they're becoming introduced to him. Now, a lot of Democratic voters, because the party has been leaning much further to the left the last decade or so, like him once they get to know him, but they need to get to know him, and it may not be happening fast enough. We're seeing that he's picking up gains nationally. We're seeing him pick up gains among African-American voters, among Latino voters. But Clinton is still far ahead of him, particularly with African-American voters. Losing the endorsement of Jim Clyburn last week was crushing to him and may have something to do with why he's paying less attention to South Carolina now.
And Hillary Clinton, of course, picking up some of Bernie Sanders' language and rhetoric on the campaign trail as well. Ryan Grimm with the Huffington Post, Maggie Haberman at the New York Times, Sabrina Siddiqui in Las Vegas with The Guardian. It's great to have all of you here. We're looking at what just happened and what's coming right up. Tomorrow in Nevada, this weekend in South Carolina for the Democrats, and next week, Super Tuesday. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this week about the Trump and Clinton wins over the weekend in South Carolina, Nevada, and the road ahead now for Rubio, Cruz, Bernie Sanders. What these early votes are saying about American politics, the American mood, and the very big primary season votes coming up right in front of us now. Super Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, March is loaded with votes all over the country. Alabamans, Tennesseans, Virginians, Oklahomans, Georgians, all listening and looking at Super Tuesday coming up. How do you see this all working out when it comes to your neck of the woods? 800-423-8255. Donald Trump on Saturday relishing that victory in South Carolina.
It's tough. It's nasty. It's mean. It's vicious. It's beautiful. When you win, it's beautiful. And we're going to start. We are going to start winning for our country.
Presidential campaigning is not patty cake, but when you win, it's beautiful, says the Donald. Hillary Clinton savoring her win and on her way to Texas. Big prize.
I am on my way to Texas. I'm on my way to Texas. Bill is on his way to Colorado. The fight goes on. The future that we want is within our grasp. Thank you all. God bless you.
And Bernie Sanders in South Carolina yesterday in Greenville saying, come on, we got one time around. Let's make a difference.
You know, we go around once. We may as well make history as we go around. We may as well do something that people will remember decades from today.
Interesting note there. Not quite sure what to make of that. Maggie Haberman, look at that. The delegate math now facing Sanders in the Democratic Party. How does that look? What does he need in this rush of votes that we will now get into?
I mean, look, he would need to do exceptionally well in South Carolina, where most of the polls show that he's unlikely to. And as Ryan said, I think the Clyburn endorsement was not just a sort of a psychic boost for Clinton and a psychic blow to Sanders. Clyburn is very popular in South Carolina, and I think does add a huge note of credibility. I frankly think it's going to be very hard for Sanders. I don't see a clear path for him, although I do think we will get through Super Tuesday, where I think he will have a tough week, and then I think it's very possible that there are a bunch of other states where the map becomes friendlier to him after Super Tuesday. And the biggest question for me is not how exactly can Bernie add up the math to make it work for him right now? My question is, how can Bernie amass enough money to keep going for a long time so that he can accrue delegates? So the most interesting thing that emerged to me over the weekend, other than just the vote totals themselves, was that Clinton has more than twice as much cash on hand as Bernie Sanders right now. And Sanders has this enormous low-dollar operation and sort of organic fundraising mechanism.
Is that not still working? That was really pulling it in for a while.
It's working, Hillary. but they spent a lot. Mm-hmm. And so at this point in the race, a lot of it is, how much money you have to soldier on. One of the reasons that Christie had to get out, other than the lack of a path, Chris Christie, from the Republican race, was that he only had about $1 million in cash on hand. So Sanders has 15, which is not nothing. But as the map becomes much more spread out, but also with all of these contests being held on the same day, it becomes a lot more complicated.
Sanders people, if you want to see him go on, it's going to take a lot of those $27 a head contributions. But there, of course, there have been many of those as we've gone here. Sabrina, stand by in Las Vegas. Ryan in Washington. Sarah's calling from Austin, Texas. Big prize next week. Sarah, thanks for calling. What do you see?
Yeah, I'm a big Sanders supporter. I'm 21. Most of my friends support Sanders. I have a few people I know who are kind of wishy-washy. And then I do know, in South Texas, where I'm originally from, the Rio Grande Valley, I know a lot of Sanders supporters there. I think the biggest thing I worry about is the upcoming Super Tuesday states, because so many, I think it's 12 states, vote at the same time. That does kind of make me worry about momentum, but I think Bernie's doing pretty well in the states that come after that, like Minnesota, Massachusetts. But I am I'm a loyal supporter. I donate $3 every month, so I just wanted to kind of put it out there that there are people in Texas who are ardent Bernie supporters.
We don't doubt it, and of course, a lot of young people, of course, right there in Austin, statewide. We'll see how it goes. I appreciate your call, Sarah. $3 a month, add those up from enough people. It's a lot, but it takes a lot in a big national race. Ray in Walterboro, South Carolina. Ray, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm African-American, and I find it simply amazing that the African-American community seems to have forgotten when Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton was in office, and I use all both of them because they both put forth policy, even though she wasn't sitting in the presidential seat. These policies seem to have hurt the African-American community in ways that are still paying consequences today. And yet we seem so willing to give her a pass because of a slick campaigning. Now,
Ray, you're talking about mass incarceration. You're talking about taking welfare down in the 90s under Bill Clinton?
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. And the thing about it, and I want to make that perfectly clear, is not just African-Americans on welfare, what have you. I know a lot of white folks on welfare,
yep.
But they use them campaign signals and those dog whistles in order to push their campaigns forward. Now, Hillary Clinton, she acts like this is new knowledge to her. Everybody seems to have forgotten a few months ago Bill Clinton even apologized for some of the policies he had in place when he was the president. No one seems to be willing to give Bernie Sanders opportunity, a chance in the African community.
But, Ray, please explain that to us, Ray. I'm reading a piece here from the Washington Post over the weekend. Bernie Sanders at a church in West Columbia, South Carolina, at, sort of lunch after church. And, he was talking, and they're saying people not really even paying that much attention to him. Still going through the buffet line, watching the Michigan-Maryland basketball game on a big screen while he was talking. You know, the reporter giving us the sense that this African-American crowd in South Carolina just felt like Clinton country.
Well, I think it's due in part to some degree of apathy, but also I see the younger African-American community engaged with Bernie Sanders, you know, because any face is better than an old face. Incidentally, I'm so glad Jeb Bush dropped out. We don't need names from the past. We need names from the future. Everybody seems to ignore this elephant in the room, such as Bernie Sanders' age, but that's why we also elect vice presidents. I say give him a chance. He can't do any worse than anyone else has done.
Ray, I appreciate your call very much. Ryan Grimm, how about this issue of the minority vote here, the African-American vote? There was the word over the weekend out of Nevada that Sanders had taken the Latino vote there. But now we've seen that disputed, you know, people saying, well, not really. There was something flawed in that entry-exit polling.
Sure, those polls are questionable, but he is picking up steam nationally with Latino voters, regardless of whether those Nevada polls were or not, and he's slowly closing the gap with African American voters as they get to know him more. But you know, the election is this Tuesday, and it's going to be difficult. Clinton has really banked everything she has on the black vote in South Carolina, and she locked down a ton of endorsements to begin with, and she's been rolling them out quite successfully, and over the last several weeks, she has also yoked herself as closely as possible to President Obama. You know, every attack that that Bernie would make on her over the last several weeks, she would respond by saying, "Well, Obama supports that, or you're actually attacking Obama, and so I'm with Obama, and you wanted to primary. You wanted somebody to primary Obama in 2012. You called him weak. You said this about Obama. You said that." And, you know, and that is working. You know, I think Hillary Clinton is picking up a lot of residual support from the support of Barack Obama.
And of course, the black vote in South Carolina, absolutely key to the overall prospects there. Republican side, Jeb Bush, amazingly, after all the money raised and all that family history, but maybe not amazingly this season, out after the South Carolina vote. Kasich and Ben Carson still in. I want to look at what drives them now. Of course, Ohio, no doubt. Kasich has his eye on, but still. Marco Rubio in Columbia on Saturday. South Carolina celebrating, saying, hey, it's a three-way race.
After tonight, this has become a three-person race, and we will win the nomination.
But who gets those votes as others drop out, even if it goes to two? In his victory speech in Spartanburg, South Carolina, Trump said, hey, don't assume that none of those votes of departing candidates will come to me.
A number of the pundits said, well, if a couple of the other candidates dropped out, if you add their scores together, it's going to equal Trump. Right? These geniuses, they're geniuses. They don't understand that as people drop out, I'm going to get a lot of those votes also. You don't just add them together.
Sabrina, you've been to South Carolina and Nevada now. You paid close attention lately to the Rubio campaign. What is their calculation about what they need and how they get it in the votes right ahead?
Well, the Rubio campaign's calculation here is all about consolidation. And so getting Jeb Bush out of the race was one big step in that direction. And I think you're going to see them start to focus and zero in on John Kasich as well. Because their scenario, ideal scenario, in their view, is that if this is a two-man race between them and Donald Trump, so if Ted Cruz were to underwhelm and be forced out, if he can't afford to lose Texas, like Maggie was saying earlier, if that happens, then they believe the party will rally around Marco Rubio as an alternative to Donald Trump. Now, you know, what you touched upon, though, is an interesting point, because the polling has shown, and certainly exit polls have shown, that Donald Trump's support cuts through the spectrum of the Republican Party, and he pulls in so many different types of Republican voters, more than the party has been willing to, I think, admit and to acknowledge. And so there isn't necessarily any evidence to show that Marco Rubio would be able to handily defeat Donald Trump in a head-to-head. In fact, a lot of the polling actually shows that Donald Trump would overwhelmingly beat Marco Rubio. So that's something that they have to contend with moving forward. I think you've seen Marco Rubio go back to this idea that he's the future of the Republican Party, that he represents a more diverse Republican Party. He stood there with Nikki Haley of course, the Indian American governor of South Carolina, and Tim Scott, the African American senator there, to kind of present this new face. But the outstanding question for his campaign, if that's his message, is that actually the Republican Party of today? Are they actually ready for the message that he's pushing in terms of the path to his candidacy?
Of course, he poised himself as the heir to the Ronald Reagan era, children of the Ronald Reagan Revolution. Rubio in South Carolina.
Ronald Reagan made us believe that it was morning in America again, and it was. Well, now the children of the Reagan Revolution are ready to assume the mantle of leadership.
Morning in America. Marco Rubio brings it back. Ted Cruz talking in South Carolina about screaming across the Potomac River. Here was Cruz.
Indeed, the screaming you hear now from across the Potomac is the Washington cartel in full terror that the conservative grassroots are rising up.
That is his theme, but it could not put him out front of Marco Rubio this time, not in South Carolina. And, of course, on that evening, a choked-up Jeb Bush saying he was through.
The people of Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina have spoken, and I really respect their decision. So tonight, I am suspending my campaign.
No.
Yeah. Thank you, man.
A long, long family run running out right there in South Carolina. Lewis in Atlanta, Georgia. Thanks for calling, Lewis. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
The future direction of our country was in Jeb Bush's hands when he directed the Secretary of State, Kathleen Harris, not to allow a recount of the Florida vote.
You're going back to Bush v. Gore in Florida and how close that was and the role he played in giving it to his brother, yeah?
In regards to that, he released a statement saying, Florida is key with regard to a shift in this nation. And no doubt these elections in Florida are key as well. That is why there is such spiritual warfare. Father, once again, we'll rejoice with your son and bring this nation into alignment with your government, with your kingdom's principles and authority. That was all at the behest of Jeb Bush, all that.
He's gone. So what do you see coming in Georgia now for the GOP, Lewis?
I hope that someone other than Trump or Cruz makes a strong showing, because I don't see those guys. I'm not a Republican. I don't want to pretend I'm a Republican, but I don't see those guys having any positive effect on the future of this country. It's going to just go backwards. I hope somebody else comes up, like Kasich, possibly.
Lewis, we've got it. Maggie, how about the Kasich and Ben Carson campaigns? I mean, this is all really interesting. Jeb Bush getting almost 8% there, in a way, not much less than right around the margin between Rubio and Trump. Ironic that, you know, Trump doesn't agree with this kind of math, but maybe if Bush hadn't been in, would Rubio have tied? Did Jeb Bush put Trump over the top? And Kasich and Carson, why do they stay in and for how long?
So that's a lot to unpack. But so just for starters, I've never really understood the assumption that one candidate's votes were all going to go to one particular other candidate. If Kasich is still in the race, I actually think that a lot of Jeb's – if you're with Jeb and you're not with Marco, then I don't – if there's another option in the race, you're not going right to Marco. Mm-hmm. So I think some of those voters might go to Kasich, provided he's still in, and I think some of them just might not vote. But again, you know, this isn't across the spectrum. These are state-by-state contests, number one. I imagine that Jeb's support in Florida would be a bit different. In terms of Carson, I think Carson has treated this in some ways as – although he has been very forcefully against any suggestion to this effect, but he has treated it – it has been something of a branding exercise. You know, there's been – he's been selling a book at the same time. There's been a huge direct mail component to his candidacy. You know, I think that he's low on cash, and so I think then that becomes the question as to how much longer he goes. In terms of Kasich, I think he would like to get to Ohio, and if it looks like he will do well in Ohio, then he will go through then. If it looks like he won't, I imagine he will get out. Kasich has run a fairly positive candidacy and campaign, and I think that he has set himself up well, although he bristles at questions about this. He has set himself up well to be somebody's vice presidential pick. And there is a world in which you could see a Trump-Kasich ticket. To something that Sabrina was talking about before in terms of the head-to-head contest with Rubio and Trump, and the way we've seen this vote break down, a lot of Cruz voters are Trump voters. So if Cruz were not in the race, The idea that it all consolidates over to Rubio, I think, is questionable, number one. And number two, it then becomes a straight discussion about immigration if it is Trump to Rubio. And this party's base is very inflamed. I'm not sure that that benefits Rubio.
This On Point podcast is supported by Squarespace, the simplest way to create a beautiful website. Whether your passion is bold, unconventional, or just plain crazy, you should share it with the world in an unforgettable way. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/onpoint. That's squarespace.com/onpoint.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at the Trump and Clinton wins over the weekend in South Carolina, Nevada, and the road ahead now for Rubio Cruz, Bernie Sanders. What these early votes are telling us about American politics 2016, the American mood here, and at this point, we're getting into the delegate calculus as well. Hillary Clinton grateful in Las Vegas on Saturday night to all those workers, especially in Vegas, who came out for her.
Hotel and casino workers who never wavered. Students with too much debt and small business owners who never go off the clock. Tens of thousands of men and women with kids to raise, bills to pay, and dreams that won't die. This is your campaign.
Dreams that won't die. Bernie Sanders in Greenville, South Carolina, yesterday saying he has made history by not underestimating the American people, but by treating them like grown-ups.
The reason that our campaign is gaining such momentum is frankly that we are treating the American people as intelligent human beings who are prepared to hear some harsh truths about our country. Now, I can give you a wonderful speech, make it all pleasant and happy and funny, but that's not the world that we are living in.
Bernie Sanders going for votes in South Carolina. Michelle's calling from Charlotte, Vermont, Sanders territory. Michelle, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just am finding myself very frustrated this morning at all of the emphasis being put on the superdelegates. For instance, on the front page of the New York Times, there's the article that's saying Bernie has a steep climb if he's going to catch up to Hillary. Well, he doesn't have a steep climb if you just look at the number of delegates. The superdelegates are not even committed at this time. And I'm just wondering if this is an example of how the media and the establishment are bedfellows, and I'll take my response off the air. Thank you.
Media, what, in with Hillary Clinton? I don't know. Maggie, speak to that. I mean, in pledged delegates, it's 51-51, Clinton-Sanders. Superdelegates, she's way out front, 451 or something like that. But what about the portrayal here? And you hear the question out of Vermont.
Yes, I heard the question out of Vermont. I mean, I think that given the amount of time that Hillary Clinton spends saying that the media is deeply against her, I could hold both of those comments up to against each other. I think that I don't think this is as I said at the top of the show. If the delegates out of Nevada are currently on track, the remaining ones in Clark County are currently on track to go more toward Hillary Clinton than they are toward Bernie Sanders, that will give her more than a tied pledged delegate lead. Mm-hmm. And then she's then heading into a series. She's heading into South Carolina, and then after that she heads into a series of Super Tuesday contests where the map favors her more than it does Sanders. So I don't think that that's some kind of media thumb on the scale, number one. And number two, you know, the superdelegates complaint, this is something that some progressive groups and some Bernie Sanders allies have complained about, is he's got a lead in pledged delegates when he did have one, and mm-hmm. he doesn't now. And you're trying to mask it by talking about superdelegates. It is certainly true that the Clinton campaign for months has pushed their lead with superdelegates as a way of saying she's inevitable. That's obviously silly because, as we saw in 2008, superdelegates change.
Yep.
And they can change. But I think that if she is leading in the pledged delegates, I think the chances of them moving becomes lesser. I mean, I think that the thing we have not discussed is that the Sanders campaign really struggled with managing the expectations with the press going into Nevada and then afterward. They went along pretty handily with many, many media narratives that he was on the cusp of victory in Nevada. And the Clinton campaign, other than a very silly trying to claim that the caucuses are 80% white, which Harry Reid got very upset about in Nevada, the Clinton campaign managed it better. And that's just that is in part the difference from somebody who has run in the past and who has not nationally.
Ryan Grimm, of course, Bernie Sanders over the weekend saying, look, we came from way back in Nevada and did pretty darn well here, within 5 or 6 points of Hillary Clinton, and he still saw momentum there. Everybody's on pins and needles here, and the accusation comes quickly of media bias. But just looking at this race, Clinton and Sanders, do you see the media weight coming down one way or another here in some unspoken terms, Ryan?
Well, like Maggie said, you know, the Clinton campaign and Clinton herself certainly believes that the entire media world is out to get her and has been out to get her for the last few decades, particularly the New York Times. So, you know, she would probably blanch at what she was hearing about, from the Vermont caller. On the other hand, certainly it is difficult for the national media to see a Democratic socialist winning the Democratic primary. That's hard for them. You know, Chuck Todd, to his great credit, brought Bernie Sanders on to meet the press shortly after he took over the show. It was the first time that Sanders had been invited on that show in the entire time that he had been in Washington, which is a period of decades. So certainly he is somebody who the national media is not accustomed to taking seriously. And now that he is polling, so closely with her, beating her in New Hampshire, roughly tied in the delegate place, I can understand why Sanders supporters are saying that the kind of the Washington, New York establishment is not treating him fairly. I can see that argument.
Of course, we've had him on right here. Soon it will be numbers, not labels, that are the issue, kind of the issue already. Larry in Hartford, Alabama. Larry, you're on the air.
Come on. Hey, Tom.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
In regards to the Southern swing and the primaries that are coming up, a lot of the conversation is that the local people, then, of course, our entire state is rural. We have very few urban regions. But the conversation has been basically when the polls come out, Donald Trump is doing very well in a poll of an individual that's called or talked to.
Yep.
Basically, our conversations have been he's the guy that's sticking his head out the window saying, mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. And everybody loves that guy, and they want to jump on that bandwagon. But when you get down to people who are actually going to vote and who are looking at things, Cruz and Rubio are getting a lot more attention than Trump is. And, of course, in Alabama, if you're in a Republican primary, you're not going to face an opponent in the fall. So, Alabama is not going to vote Democratic anymore as it
yeah.
did a year ago. But from the state, from the county commissioners to the state legislators to the congressional districts to the senators, you got to win in your primary. So what I'm saying is, evangelicals are a strong point, but that's not lockstep for Cruz or for Rubio. And again, there's a lot of cheering going for Trump, but there's going to be a lot of voting for one of the other two candidates.
Larry, we've got it. Sabrina Siddiqui, what about this line, Trump is not a serious candidate? But he won in New Hampshire. He won in South Carolina.
Look, the reality is that from the outset, there's been this hope among, the Republican, whether it's the Republican establishment or those voters who do not identify with Donald Trump, that he's not a serious candidate. You heard for a long time his Republican opponents, whether it was Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio to this day continues to say that he's not a serious candidate. But what has been shown, in New Hampshire overwhelmingly, in South Carolina overwhelmingly, we're looking at Nevada, the Nevada caucus here tomorrow, where again, he's poised for a big victory. He is a serious candidate. He's running away with the nomination. Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio are fast running out of time, even as far as, their delegate-based strategy is concerned. And like Maggie was saying earlier, there's, this notion that voters necessarily defect to, Marco Rubio if Ted Cruz drops out of the race, isn't even necessarily true or rooted in any reality. In fact, Ted Cruz, as she said, a lot of those supporters are Donald Trump supporters, which makes the number of Republicans who are more in line with Donald Trump potentially outnumber those who are more in line with the alternative wing in this race. So I think the reality is that not only can you not dismiss him, at this point there has to be a concerted effort to figure out if there even is a way to stop him.
Here's Cruz at Meet the Press on Sunday saying he's the guy who can stop Trump.
One of the clearest indications of who can beat Trump is Donald spends every waking moment attacking me. He doesn't attack any other candidates because his campaign views us as the only real threat to him.
Of course, everybody wants to say they're the one, but as long as Cruz and Rubio are in there and so closely matched, at least in South Carolina, that seems to just perpetually work, Maggie, in Trump's favor.
I agree with that. I mean, look, Cruz's line, I think, is the best line Cruz can use right now. I mean, Cruz is – we can't overstate the degree to which Cruz coming in third, albeit a very close right behind, you know, within a nano percentage of a point behind Rubio in South Carolina. But this was not where he wanted to be. South Carolina is a very, very favorable state for him with a very high concentration of evangelical voters. I know we talked about this earlier in the hour. And Trump won those voters. So now some of that is because, there's a split among these candidates. But that is a problem for Cruz. You have to play the game that's in front of you. I think to Sabrina's point, there is a real risk for the Republican candidates. I was very struck watching Marco Rubio yesterday on the morning shows saying over and over again that he, Trump is going to have to get serious. And at this stage of the race, voters really want to know more details about foreign policy. Mm-hmm. If that's his plan to stop Trump, is to say, I need your detailed foreign policy plan. When candidates say to voters over and over again, that person who you're voting for is not serious, it offends voters. Mm-hmm. And for Rubio, this is particularly interesting heading into Florida. I'm hard-pressed to see on Super Tuesday where Rubio is going to win. And there are a couple of states where he could do okay. But really, he's got to be looking down the court toward March 15th in Florida. And remember, Rubio came into office as an insurgent candidate during a Tea Party wave of 2010, and defeated Charlie Crist in what was also a three-way contest. But in the 6 years, he has become very much an establishment player. And so if Jeb Bush is where the state was, Marco Rubio is where the state went, Trump might be where the state is going. And Rubio needs to be very mindful of that heading into Florida, not sounding like he's offending voters.
Bob in Detroit, Michigan. Bob, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I'm just wondering if the strategy to keep Trump out might be to keep as many of these lower-tier candidates in the process for as long as possible, because then that would deprive Trump of the majority of delegates going into the convention.
Just keep the field loaded all the way through? I mean, he keeps winning, but I guess he'd be in the biggest spot there. Ryan, have you played out these different scenarios of who stays in, how long, and what that means for Donald Trump or anybody else?
Yes, and I've even heard that some Republican fundraisers have been making that claim to donors as they've been going around making calls that's one of the fallback strategies.
Keep them all in.
Now that might be a bluff to try to why would I fund this guy? Well, we're going to keep everybody in the race. So who knows how tied to actual strategy it is? But that is certainly something that's floating around, and in particular Ohio, which is a winner take all state. It is very favorable terrain for Donald Trump. It is also John Kasich's home state. So, there may be an argument for Kasich to stay in long enough that he can deprive Donald Trump of the Ohio delegates, which would kind of be a particular tactic in the general strategy of keeping all of these people in order to keep Donald Trump under 50. But then what do you do at the convention? Okay, let's say you do have Donald under 50, but he has a plurality. It becomes very tough at that point for the establishment, unless they can rally somebody like Paul Ryan, to rope it from. And then you risk Donald Trump.
Take him off the bench
and
bring him in that late in the game?
Who knows at this point?
Wow, amazing. I mean, Sabrina, you've been covering Marco Rubio. He seemed to get kind of rattled under that very heavy attack from Chris Christie before Christie dropped out in advance of New Hampshire. Picture him one-on-one with Trump. They haven't really tangled. If Trump begins to bring his sort of Trumpian attacks to Marco Rubio, how does he respond?
Well, that's one of the, I think, points that's been fascinating about Marco Rubio's campaign so far, because one of the ways that he has succeeded is, in some ways, by adopting a more Trumpian tone. He's moved very far to the right when it comes to immigration, of course, to denounce the comprehensive bill he worked on. There's multiple times in comments he's made about Muslims and, closing down mosques have in at least been picked up by the media as sounding not too dissimilar to Trump as part of, you know, his tactic of not offending those voters. So, you know, now he has to kind of move out of that place and show that he's the foil to Donald Trump. So that's a question. How are you going to do that? And like Maggie said, you can't just say that Trump's not serious because clearly voters have decided otherwise. And I think one of the points also is that, you know, if Marco Rubio is going to be the alternative, he's going to have to contend with the reality that now he will be the establishment. Maggie was just pointing out, you know, he has cemented a very different identity in the Senate than when he ran, you know, against Charlie Crist as this Tea Party darling. That's no longer what he is known as. He could say it on the stump that he ran as an outsider 6 years ago, but that's not how voters view him now. And he has towed the line on a lot of the party issues. He's not the rabble-rouser that Ted Cruz has been. And so you will see how quickly I think you'll start to see it just from Ted Cruz and Donald Trump, this effort in the coming weeks to say, you know, Mark, now that Jeb Bush is out of the race, because John Kasich is not as much of a threat to them, at least in the short term, Marco Rubio is of the establishment. And I think he's going to have to find a way to make to overcome that in an election year where obviously that is viewed as a liability.
Well, all of this coming up and coming up very, very quickly now. Fascinating to see exactly how this all unfolds. Really grateful to all three of you for helping us look into it today. Sabrina Siddiqui in Las Vegas, where the Republicans will be in caucus tomorrow. Thanks so much for being with us, Sabrina. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
Sabrina Siddiqui with The Guardian in Las Vegas. Ryan Grimm with The Huffington Post in Washington, bureau chief there, watching all of this unfold. Ryan, thanks very much for your insights today.
Great to be here.
And Maggie Haberman, presidential campaign correspondent for The New York Times with a big eye on the whole thing. Maggie, you're terrific. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm on Twitter at Tom Ashbrook, NPR. We'll be watching. Stick with us. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.